Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, March 11th, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 269 of the show. I have a super special return guest, comedian and podcaster Andy Klein of the Three Guys on Podcast. You know him, you love him. He's back on the show. Gonna share that conversation with him. Gonna share that conversation. I'm not sharing the conversation with Andy because we've already had the conversation. I'm sharing the conversation that Andy and I had with you in a few minutes. Right now, I am recording this intro. I'm in my apartment. I just had a chicken and broccoli dinner. I went to KFC. I know that's a Black Twitter no-no, but I gotta say, it's not bad. I hadn't been in a long time. A couple weeks ago, I went and I was like, this is pretty tasty. It's pretty good. And I made myself some fresh broccoli. I had some of that. And I had some Welch's grape soda. I was in the city. Welch's grape soda is kind of, now I wouldn't say, I wouldn't say it's a delicacy, but I would say that it's hard to find. At least it's not super scary. When I see it, I have to get it, basically. So I was in the city for a couple days, and I had to park in this parking garage on Thursday and Friday, and the vending machine had Welch's grape in a can. So I got a couple of them each time that I was there, and so I'm just kind of drinking these. You shouldn't be drinking this shit. I've listened to Fonte's album Expensive Jeans, Cry No More, Digging a Grave with Your Teeth. And the messages are right in front of me. I'm like, oh, this album's fucking great. I'll have two triple cheeseburgers and a large fry. You know, like, what the fuck? McDonald's is my shimmer, I would say. If you've seen Annihilation or A Wrinkle in Time, that's kind of my shimmer. I'm not perfect. I ain't no perfect man. I'm trying to do the best that I can with what it is I have. Put my heart and soul into this podcast, y'all. I hope you feel me. Wherever I am to wherever you are. Mean that sincerely. Tomorrow may never come for you and me. All right. Sorry, guys. So I did that. And so I had a nice little Welch's grape soda. This past week was pretty fucking cool. I did a Slate Represent podcast. The great Aisha Harris had me on her show. We did an Oscar recap. That was fun. I did the End the Conversation podcast with Damian Lemon and Ali Muhammad. So you can check those out. That's available wherever you listen to podcasts, whatever your favorite app is. I'm sure that you can listen to him on there. So scheduled to do one tonight with the homie John from the About to Review podcast. So that's going to happen. So that'll probably come out later on in this week, and I'll share that link with you. I did a spoiled movie review with Rod from The Black Guy Who Tips. We did a spoiled movie review of Gringo, and it was really, we had a good time doing that. He was the only other person that I knew that who was excited about it. And I guess, I don't know, I think Rod and I were talking, we were talking about it maybe on a Patreon, recent Patreon episode that I did, or one of his episodes on his show. So I'm not 100% sure, but we were kind of excited about that. And it is a good movie. Don't let the Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes scores fool you. It's actually really good. It's a fun movie. If you don't want to see Black Panther for the 15th time, maybe check out a guy of African descent on doing a dark comedy. Why not? And so this week I worked on a pilot for NBC. That was pretty cool. I posted a couple pictures on Instagram. I was supposed to do the shoot Thursday. It was supposed to be a 1-day shoot. They didn't get around to using me, so I paid for 2 days work. I sat in my trailer, my little honey wagon cell, if you're in doing something like that, if you're on a shoot or something, make sure you have enough stuff to read or to watch. Because I had, the second day I was prepared because I watched this show, this new Netflix show that came out, miniseries called Collateral with Carey Mulligan. She's playing a detective, and I'm a sucker for these detective shows. And you give me a white starlet? You give me a white starlet in this joint, young? I'm like, I'm in. So I dug that, and I watched maybe the first two episodes of that in the while I was waiting to go on set, and ended up shooting the set. It was really fucking cool, man. It was really dope to be on set, man. It was really fun. I played a cab driver, had a couple lines, and did my thing, and it was good. Everybody was really nice. Hope it makes it. Hope it makes it to air. That was the second pilot that I've ever worked on. Last year, I think I may have said this, I did a pilot for ABC, and it was supposed to be like a show with Lorenz Tate and John Leguizamo, and that just it just never took off. And on set, I played like a ferry cop, like you working not a ferry as in homosexual, but a ferry cop that worked on by the ferry boats. Anyway, it was cool because I was only supposed to have like one or two lines, and they ended up letting me improv and do all this cool shit. I was making the extras laugh. I was having a good time, and that footage is on the cutting room floor. But speaking of something, so I hope that goes. It was really cool. Everybody was real nice. Speaking of something that did make the cut, I am in an episode of Jessica Jones, season 2, episode 12, about 12 to 13 minutes in. I play a male nurse, and that's all I'm going to tell you. And that was really fucking cool to be. That was the second Netflix show that I was a part of. Kimmy Schmidt, I got cut out of, RIP. Still think you could see my forehead on that, but that's really cool. So if you watch Jessica Jones, check it out. That was really, really fucking cool. And what else? I think that's it. So I did just get back from seeing this movie Thoroughbreds with Olivia. Oh God, I think her name. She was in Me and Earl and the Olivia Cook, I believe. Why don't they do? I hate sometimes that. Yeah, okay. Olivia Cook, I was right. Anya Taylor-Joy from Anya Taylor-Joy was from The Witch, Split, to name a few. I think she was in the Barry movie, the Obama movie, Netflix movie. Olivia Cook was from Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, and the late Anton Yelchin from Like Crazy that Tim and I talked about a couple weeks ago. Star Trek, very talented actor that passed away in a freak accident. This movie is I tweeted this, folks. This has to be one of the greatest white girl magic movies that I've ever seen in my life. It's a dark comedy. It's fucked up, and of course, I posted that I, you know, I, when I go to the movies, I check in on Facebook and stuff. And my hating ass cousin was like, oh, what did you think about it? I was disappointed. And I said, I enjoyed it, man. It was good. And he gave me the vomit face emoji. So I don't know. I think maybe I'll do an indie movie corner. If I can't get someone to do it with me, I'll most likely do one myself and kind of just talk about it for a bit. So I do recommend that television recommendation. Did I say that show, the show that was the BB show was called Collateral? I recommend that. I also recommend Grownish. I just binge watched that. So I'm caught up. I don't know if they're doing a finale in a couple weeks or what, but I'm all caught up on Grownish. God, that's a good show. It's so good. It's just like Yara Shahidi's a great lead. She's a good actress. A lot of the cast is really funny. It's just a really good show. It's kind of like Blackish, but taken up a notch because it's on cable where they say shit. And they it's not just because of the cursing, but it's actually it seems like it's just real. It's a real ass show. It's good. I like it. I like the edge and it's got a little bit of grit to it. And I like this theme song too. Watch out. What is it? Nah, 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 I'm grown now. I'm grown. So I like that show. I was 15 minutes into the third and final season of Love, which is pretty good. And it's cool. So I think that's it. That's enough of me blabbing. Why don't we just get to Andy Klein? So Andy, I've wanted to have back on the show for a while now, and we made it happen. And we just kind of shot the shit, talked about some things, and it's just always a great conversation talking to Andy. He's one of the greats. He's the best. So without further ado, here's me talking to the great Andy Klein. eBay is asking me how I liked the purchase of a used movie that I bought. It was great.
I never answer those.
I don't either.
I'm such a leech though, because I don't review, because sometimes Amazon will do that. They'll ask you like, yeah, how'd you like this thing you bought? Go review it. And I never do. And yet I always consult reviews. Always. So 100% of the time.
So you're not contributing back to the circle.
Not at all. And every purchase, especially major purchases, but anything really, if I'm on Amazon and there's 100 different versions of the thing I want, I'll check the reviews. I'll try to see if they're legitimate complaints. Sometimes if someone gives a 1-star review, you can tell they're just an asshole, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll dissect it. I'll determine whether the reviews are legit or not, and then make my purchase. And then when it comes time for me to give back, I'm like, well, fuck you guys. I'm out, you know?
Yeah.
I think I don't want my name out there. Maybe it's because being a comic, like if someone Googles me, I don't want them to see my Amazon review.
This toaster oven sucks, Andy Klein.
Right, exactly. I like that guy's jokes, but you know, he trashed the same dog leash that I bought, so screw that guy, you know.
Yeah, Louis had that bit about I guess they aired it on his show where he was talking about like somebody's writing this review. And this really detailed review about somebody who's probably dead, you know, about some Blu-ray player and all this shit. But some of that stuff is pretty helpful. But then you can just kind of get down this rabbit hole. I find it more often with restaurants when I'm looking up places. And it's just like, God, you know, they took all this time to write this thing. And it's just like, Jesus, like Damon Lemon has a really good bit about just trying to find a pizza shop and looking at the review on Yelp. And like, this dude is like, oh, I was a wintry day and me and my buddy Alvin went to go. And he's like, dude, you don't have to be Ernest Hemingway. Just tell me if the pizza's good.
Well, I think the one thing that ruined Yelp is that they added for the reactions. It wasn't just like a thumbs up, helpful or unhelpful. Mm-hmm. There's a funny that you can tag something as funny.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people who aren't funny are like, I'm going to be whimsical.
Right.
And they give their whimsical review of a sushi place. And yeah, they're talking about all that. You can tell they're really like open mic-y and they're like really trying to get some laughs out of it.
Yeah.
And it's never funny. It always gets in the way of the review. And also, like, I've worked in restaurants, mm-hmm. you know, a bunch of them. And you can tell when someone's review is because they sucked and not the restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you can just tell. So you read those Yelp reviews, like one star, and then you can just read the entitlement in their review, what they expected. I walked in and no one sat me for 4 minutes. And it's like, all this, it's like, yeah, who gives a fuck? Like, was the food good? That's all I care about.
Because they turned me off because it's just like, I was doing a gig in South Jersey and someone recommended a place to me. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll check that out if I get there, you know, in time. Yeah. And then I was looking at the reviews. I was looking at them. Oh, this looks pretty good. Started reading it. And it's just like, I'm just going to go to McDonald's after the show. Fuck. Like, Jesus Christ.
Right. Well, that's the other thing, too. It's like, if someone gives a 3-star, like mediocre review at a restaurant, I'm like, well, I'm not above eating at a 3-star restaurant.
Right.
You know, I'll go, if I go to McDonald's, it's probably lower. I mean, granted it's cheaper, but still it's not going to affect me all that much unless the place is just like a bunch of 1-stars and there's like literal pictures of rats and roaches,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
line dancing in the lobby or something.
I've been trying to go to some of the places that I follow on Instagram because I went to a couple, like this place I've been following for a couple years now. I was doing a show. It's this pizza place called Emmy Squared, and it's in Williamsburg. And I was doing a show at the Knitting Factory. And I was like, oh, I don't have to work the next day. And I made it in just before they closed and got pizza there. And it was good. Like, it was like, oh, okay, this is worth the hype. And it's a good place. So it's like, some of these places are pretty good. I've talked about it a couple times. They should be sponsoring the fucking show. But since we're talking about it, you and I have had this conversation before, and I think we talked about it on the show before, how like you have these restaurants now with these cool and interesting names. Like I think we talked about like something called like Butter, but the but it's like one, it's B-U-T-R or something, you know, some weird thing. And a comedian buddy of mine, Darren Patterson, took a picture of this place in Montclair, New Jersey, and it was a place called Oh My Cod. It's a fish place. And I was like, oh, this looks really interesting. And I was like, so I just said, oh, how was it? And he's like, I haven't been. But I just thought the restaurant was cool. And so I went to that place. Like I went there and had some fish, and I'm not even a fish guy, but it was good, you know?
I wouldn't even know where to start with fish. I mean, I know salmon and then everything else. They all taste like fish. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't tell cod from tilapia or whatever. I mean, I guess I could. I mean, I have crab legs and lobster, but other than that, I'm not a big fish guy. Like the filet of fish at McDonald's probably tastes the same to me as
whatever
they got.
Dude, I'm the same way, and I get a lot of shit. Not a lot, but I've had it in the past where people will say, oh, so you're a big seafood guy, right? And I'm like, no, but you're from Maryland. Do you ever get that? I never really gave it.
No, shit. I think Virginia is separated from that. Like, everyone thinks Maryland is just full of crab cakes for some reason. And it's really just one part, like, by the water. The rest of Maryland doesn't give a fuck about crab cakes.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure you remember the chain, Chesapeake Bay Seafood House.
All you can eat.
Yeah, that was the family restaurant because that was my mom and dad. My dad loved the spiced shrimp there, and you get all you can eat. And I would always get the chicken and fries. And that, like, I didn't care. I didn't care about the seafood. And the hush puppies are good there. But then when that went away, like we just kind of stopped. And I think one Christmas we went to like this place in like deep Southern Maryland and got, and I took them, they got, my mom got crab legs and my dad got the shrimp. So, but yeah, like
yeah.
I noticed that I do get that when I tell them like, oh, I'm not really, you know, I made some salmon this week that I got from the store. That was pretty good. Took it to lunch.
Yeah, it's all pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, I've never had a, no one's ever told me about a life-changing salmon.
No.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really, yeah, I need to do, but I need to, I'm trying, like, I don't know, I'm just trying to be more adventurous. I'm trying to be less reclusive this year. And trying to just go out a little more. And I've been trying to, instead of just going to my old staples as far, even, you know, it just in life, but with restaurants, like I've noticed, like, oh, I want to try this place on Instagram looks cool. So I'll go check it out. So I've been trying to do more of that when I do eat out.
Well, you know, my new place that you haven't been to yet, there's a Fuddruckers right down the street. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Remember we tried to go on King Street and it closed down?
Yeah, I think that was, I think that building is still just an empty, used to be Fuddruckers.
Ugh.
Like, it still has like the yellow awnings outside, but where I live now is a Fuddruckers. I haven't been there. I don't think I've ever been to Fuddruckers.
You've never been?
No, I don't think so.
Really? You should, well, see, now I don't want to sice it, and then you go and like, Chris, this was bullshit. But I think, even though I went there for my birthday, actually, after work, I went there. I don't know. There's definitely childhood nostalgia attached to it for me because my dad used to take me there. We used to go to the batting cages. I think that was Cameron Run, like in Alexandria. I think we went to the batting cages in Alexandria, and then we went to the Fuddruckers on Duke Street, the now defunct Fuddruckers.
Yeah, yeah.
But they have them out like in Western New Jersey now. But it's good, you know. I think it's a really good, like, sit down quasi fast food burger. It's just like another level, you know.
It's just burgers though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is burgers. You can get. I remember Tim saying he liked Tim Miller. Saying like he liked their chicken sandwich, and I tried it once, which is like odd for me to go to Fuddruckers and try the chicken sandwich, but I did it, and it's good, you know.
It's good.
Yeah. So, but it is. But I think like Shake Shack is just like cheeseburger heroin. That's it's intense. But yeah, those reviews, like speaking of those of reviews, I was just thinking about, like, I went into Best Buy on a Saturday, last Saturday. It's just, it's dead in there, man. Amazon's taking over.
Yeah, I like going to Best Buy too. I hope they don't shut down because, and I'm not one of those people, you know, some people like literally will use Best Buy as their little showroom to go and poke and prod at the stuff they want, and then go to Amazon and actually buy it.
Yeah.
And, see, I don't like that because if I have to return it, it's a whole pain in the ass to, like, pack up a TV or even a computer monitor or something and send it back, you know?
Yeah, I would, I don't know. Like, it's weird because, the same thing, just what you said, I went to this, Army-Navy surplus store to get some thermal underwear and the place is closing down and the woman said, yeah, we've been here 40 years. These millennials just come in and take pictures of stuff. And then they order it online.
Yeah.
Just like, Jesus Christ. It's like, it's right in front of you. Like, why don't you just buy it? So that's.
Yeah, I don't get that. I'd much rather just get in the car, drive for a few minutes, pick shit up and have it home that night.
Yeah.
You know?
And sometimes Amazon sends you shit like on Sundays too. Like I've ordered the last couple times I've ordered something and they've gotten it to my place pretty quick, but. I don't know. It's still, I always, every time I talk about something like this, I always sound like a black and young black Andy Rooney, where I'm just like, why don't they do these things like they used to?
Right. Why isn't it like I'm used to? Why is it different?
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know, man. Like there's something about, to me, there's something about the brick and mortar stores. I guess, like you with restaurants, like I've worked in retail before, and it's something like, you know, like I like going, like, I don't know if it's because my dad worked in the grocery store industry that I like going into grocery stores. I like Wegmans, you know, like it's just, I like the vibe of it, you know, like you can get, it's cheap, it's, you know, the food's good and everything, but I don't know, it's just, I've kind of fear the future a little bit when it just comes to some of this stuff, because you want to have those interactions with people, and we're losing that. And people, like, some of these people don't know how to, like, fucking just engage someone, another human being. It's so weird. My office.
I'm in a weird spot with that, because I actually prefer not to interact. So I'll go to the grocery store at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning when there's nobody there, yeah. You know, except for, like, you know, when I actually have to pay for my stuff at the cashier, which usually, like, the 1 a.m. cashier is sort of starved for conversation. So they'll start yapping.
Right.
And, I'll be like, but that's, to me, that's, I like to have the entire aisle to myself, every aisle I'm in. Like, that's perfect for me. Like, there's no one else there. I don't mind that there's people, like, stocking shelves and shit, like, working.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, even Best Buy, like, you know, the salesman walks up, like, can I help you? I'm always like, no.
Well,
even if I have a question, I'm like, no, I'll figure it out myself. I'll Google it. Damn, like, I don't want you.
You're worse than me. Well, I do, like, I remember going to Wegmans. They just opened up a Wegmans about 20 minutes away from me. And I remember doing a show at Levity after this was like a Saturday show, and going into Wegmans. It was dope. Like, it was just like people were just the workers were just there stocking the shelves. And I went in there, got a bunch of stuff, and got out. Didn't have to go anywhere Sunday morning because I already had my groceries. It was great.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind that, but it's just sometimes this stuff can be too cold. Like, you know, like going, I was talking about on a Patreon episode, I was talking about like going into the record store, like Waxy Maxies or The Wiz or Kent Mill Records as a kid, where it's just like going in there and asking for the artist. And then they take the tape off of the wall and they pull it down, and there's that protective, like, fucking, what do you call it? The stuff so that you don't steal the shit?
Oh, yeah, those, whatever those things are, those
fucking things, you have to unlock them. And it's like, it was like, it was almost ceremonial. Just like going to Toys R Us, your mom or dad buys you the video game, you take that ticket, and you pay for it, and they go in the little warehouse and... It's fun, you know. It's like it's. I don't know. I kind of miss that.
I think we just associate those moments with happiness.
That's true.
Like, a kid now will associate the little download finish pop up.
Yeah.
With they'll have the same. I mean, their anticipation only lasts a couple minutes, whereas we would drive to the store. You know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
The release date, you know, on the calendar. You drive to the store. You get it. The whole, you know, ordeal.
Yeah.
But I bet they have a similar thing that will one day become outdated as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, man, these kids don't know, you know, used to download the shit and then, like, go on as you were listening, like, everyone on Twitter using the same hashtag, and you could listen together with the whole world as it, you know, one, and we would connect. And kids today, they don't not connect or whatever.
Right.
I mean, I wonder if it's because, you know, people are into vinyl now, but I wonder if the pendulum swings back to, like, how it was when we were kids, which is, you know, more tactile, more tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe there are stores that sell music or whatever it is. Maybe there's more of a, like, a physical nature to it. I wonder if the young people now will look at that generation of kids, if that was to happen, and say, oh, they go to the store and take the thing off the shelf and open it. Like, you know, they don't know what it's like to download something and, you know, all this other stuff. I wonder if they'll look down on that as not the proper way to enjoy something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like that in a way where it's like, you know, you pre-order something on iTunes and then it'll say your copy is available to download or...
You know, like
when Fonte announced his album last week, I was like, oh shit, like, you put it on Instagram. He kind of Beyonce'd it a little bit where he was just like, oh, my album's coming out at midnight. And I was like, all right. And then there's certain artists that I noticed that I always get excited about. And then downloading a game on PlayStation Network. That's kind of, It's neat, you know?
Yeah.
You could still go to GameStop, though. Those thieves at GameStop.
Yeah, I think if I was into gaming, I'd prefer downloading. Because, again, the GameStop is just a small store. You can't get out without talking to people. Yes, you know what I mean? And they got to upsell you on their little, whatever little club card you have to get. You know, all the stores have that shit.
Yeah.
Are you a preferred member? No, it's Home Depot. I'm not a preferred member. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, they got me one time when I bought in like a used copy of NBA 2K. I don't even know how much that shit helps. But sometimes, yeah. Like I was looking, I was at Target and I was looking for this cleaner and there was a nice guy. He was like, oh, can I help you with something? I was like, I'm looking for this like CLR cleaner because I saw it on a commercial. And the guy was like super helpful and he found it. And there's another guy like that at Best Buy, like some people who actually, you know, give a fuck. And then like Louis again had another great bit about like a guy. He had like a guy that works at Best Buy because his son like drained him of all of his money and he's retired and he had to come out of retirement to work at Best Buy. And he's wearing a bow tie because he gives a shit. And he's like, and he's helping you like so much.
It's like the old people version of that Calvin commercial.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like working really hard because of his shitty son. But like because I used to be like that, but not like super aggressive. But I would help people out, and I remember like I always say like the end of Blockbuster was, you know. It was sad because I had a guy when I was living in Chicago. There was a mom and pop video store called LA Tan and Video, and it was you could get a tan and you could get DVDs and shit. But I think I was the only person that gave a shit about the DVDs. And the guy like I've said this shit before, but I basically had a tab. Like he would give me these movies and then I would just pay for them. You know, like he would give, you know, I had the hookup. He would take care of me. And so when I moved away from Chicago, like I had the Blockbuster, and the Blockbuster, I had a guy. Like he was like, oh, you like this movie? You'll probably like this one. And I did, you know?
Yeah.
So now it's kind of like, well, you know, you kind of get this shit on the internet and people tell you about stuff. But yeah, I get made fun of. For going to Redbox. I think I'm one of the few people that go to Redbox, but man, whatever.
I went to a McDonald's that had touchscreen a few weeks ago.
Dude, that's, oh my God.
Have you done that yet?
Dude, that's bad. I know, I've done it so many times.
So, see, I don't know if it's bad. Here's the thing. Years ago, a Sheetz opened up. Right down the street from where I lived.
Oh, now the and place where you currently live?
No, it's actually near where I currently live, but this was years ago. This is back in like, I don't know, the 90s.
Okay.
And the Sheetz opened up and you could go in, didn't have to talk to anyone, do a little touch screen order, they just call out your number, your food is done. And to me that was like the best thing ever. In fact, the worst thing that ever happened at Sheetz was I started going in there so often that the staff would start talking to me. And I was like, no, I go in here so no, I don't have to talk. That's the whole point of this touchscreen situation. And they were like, hey, how you doing? And, you know, and I would always try to avoid that. So this McDonald's, I walked in one, and you know, the touchscreens are new.
Yeah.
So they had actual McDonald's employee, like, you know, directing people to the touchscreen.
Yeah.
And explaining it like, oh, it's push this and push that. And you know, hopefully you'll get the hang of it. And then once they implement it everywhere, you just know what to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I don't go to McDonald's much, but I feel like I prefer ordering at a touchscreen. I mean, like Panera Bread has a touchscreen.
Oh, someplace. I didn't know that. I like the McDonald's thing. I just think it's bad for me because I don't need to be fucking going there. But you can customize your burger, and because I guess they had to step their game up and had to try to do something differently, because you can get like lettuce on it, you can get bacon on your burger, all this shit. But yeah, like I like it, but I don't, you know, I try to not go there as much.
I mean, I prefer just I like technology, so I'm fine with, you know, a a more, because technology for me is often a way to avoid people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I kind of like that in certain situations. Not that I dislike talking to cashiers at McDonald's, but sometimes there's a line, mm-hmm. and if you just get your order in and just go sit down, that's more convenient.
Yeah. You know? No, I totally understand. That's just one of those things where there, it is a chain. It kind of like, for me, it's like, oh, I get to pick what kind of things I want myself, and I don't have to tell them. I just do.
And right. They might get it wrong. They might misunderstand. And I mean, some people have language barriers, and then, you know, then you get mad at the guy for not understanding you and all this other shit. And
yeah.
Just avoid the whole problem. Now you're responsible if your order's fucked up. You click the wrong shit.
Well, I want to switch gears with you, Andy, and talk a little bit about sports, because you always have an interesting perspective on the stuff you talk about on the podcast, and you said something one time where, well, let's do this. Like, how did you feel one about the Redskins or the racial slurs, as some people like to call them?
Right.
How did you feel about their season? How do you feel about, what's the Cousins? How do you feel about him leaving? And then go ahead.
Cousins leaving to me, like, it's kind of reminiscent. Well, the Cavaliers trading Isaiah Thomas kind of reminded me a little bit of the Cousins situation, which is, they got themselves into this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Redskins could have signed Cousins 3 years ago, you know, for a pretty good deal. It would have been underpaying him by today's standards. And, you know, he would have been fine. It would have been maybe a 3 or 5 year deal and see what happens kind of thing. And they botched it. So the deal they made to bring in Alex Smith, it was fine. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't a great deal, but it's kind of the best they could do considering they botched this other situation, you know?
Right.
I feel like that with Cleveland. I think they traded for Isaiah Thomas. It turned out it didn't work out. And then, you know, they maximized the plan B by getting rid of him and what they got back for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Cousins is fine. Like, he's solid. He's got that Tony Romo thing where, like, the worst time ever to throw an interception is when he throws interceptions. I went to the opening game. I got, like, as a birthday present, my wife got me tickets to opening day this past season against the Eagles. And I was there with Dominic Rivera, who is an Eagles fan. And, like, the Redskins got down, like, into the red zone at one point. And I turned to Dominic and I was like, this is time for Kirk Cousins' patented back-breaking interception. And literally that play, he threw an interception. Like, in the end, like, it's so predictable. Like, he just does that all the time. And, you know, he's fine. His mistakes are magnified because they come at the worst time. But with the Redskins in general, I found myself kind of, I mean, this past season, I checked out toward the end of the season. I kind of stopped watching the last 2 or 3 games. Like, I barely paid attention to them. And I think it's partly because I'm just sick of the whole Dan Snyder era.
Yeah.
Like, it's just every year, it's all the same drama. It's always, you know, toward the end of every season, there's all these, like, sources close to the team, and then they start throwing players under the bus. And it's all coming from, you know, the owner's office, basically. Every year, there's some shit that happens.
It's been over 20 years now, right?
I think this was 20. I think he took over the team in 97 or 98.
Because I remember being in high school when he took over. I was like 17. Ugh.
Yeah, in fact, when the team was sold, the original ownership group was the Milstein Snyder group. It was these two guys, the Milstein brothers, who were the majority owners. Mm-hmm. And, like, they were going on all the local, like, Channel 4 sports and everything. Like, hey, here were the Redskins' new owners, because the sale was approved and all that. It was the two Milstein guys. Snyder was nowhere to be found. And then the NFL rejected the Milstein deal ultimately.
Huh.
They rejected it because the Milsteins had too much money in credit and not enough in cash to buy the team.
Yeah.
And so once they rejected it, Dan Snyder was like, you know, he saw an opening and he just went and got a bunch of people together, the former new ownership group, where he would be the majority owner. and they just immediately stepped in and bought the team. So then became Dan Snyder instead of the Milstein Snyder Group.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, like, what would how would the team have been different had that not happened? You know.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the Milstein brothers. I don't know, you know, what they're all about. But the common denominator is Dan Snyder. It's just not fun being a Redskins fan. There's just no fun to it. It's always bullshit.
Is there
going to the game is a nightmare. The stadium is 100 miles away. Mm-hmm. Everything costs $40 at the stadium.
Yeah.
I went to the game opening day. It was like 30,000 Eagles fans there. It was ridiculous.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Me and Dominic were driving in, like, for the parking areas, and just, you know, all these people who were walking to the stadium from where they are, mm-hmm. they were all wearing Eagles shirts.
Wow.
It was ridiculous. And so going to the game isn't fun. Watching the team is barely fun. And then every year toward the end, when they start collapsing, it's just all these Dan Snyder, you know, attempts at some kind of Machiavellian thing where he starts planting stories in the news. And then the other thing was he gave Trump $1 million for his inauguration fund.
Mm.
So I'm like, eh. I mean, the team is different than the owner, but it's a thin line. Like, if they fuck up a little bit these days, I'm like, all right, I'm out. You know, I'm going to go do something else now. You know, I'm not going to watch the rest of this game. I can't buy in anymore.
Who do you think is gonna be the quarterback now? Like, what's their pick? I'm trying to look up who they.
I think their pick is like the 13th pick or something.
Okay.
See, the way Dan Snyder operates, the sexy pick will be a guy like Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
I don't think they can get him where they are, but he has shown in the past that he's willing to trade every pick for the next 5 years to move up in the draft, you know?
Well, I mean, Lamar Jackson is a black quarterback, so he could possibly fall to that low.
He could fall, and, you know, there's all these questions about Lamar Jackson, like, oh, all these, like,
fucking hate coded. That. Yeah.
Owners have questions about Lamar Jackson, and they'll question something about him, and they'll praise that dude Josh Allen, who has a lower completion percentage mm-hmm. than Lamar Jackson, and then they'll call Lamar Jackson out for being inaccurate, you know. So
yeah,
he could fall, but the problem with the Redskins is they won't wait for him to fall. Like, if he falls, they'll just be like, oh, lucky up.
I'll give you everything.
Yeah, but they might just move up just in case he doesn't fall.
Yeah.
They've been known to do that. But, I mean, they got Alex Smith. He's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he'll be okay for like 2 more years. What, 35 years old or something?
Okay.
33. He'll be okay for like 2 more years. They're going to have to draft someone soon. And I feel like they might just pull the trigger this year and make one of those off-season champions kind of moves that they always make, you know?
How did you feel about the season as a whole? I kind of didn't give a shit.
Yeah, me either. I was kind of muted. It was like the whole thing was on mute.
And it, cause
and
it, yeah.
Like, I, even like with fantasy football, like, I had, this year I'm seriously thinking about just dropping. I have, you know, two leagues I'm in.
Okay.
And like halfway through that, I was like, yeah, I don't care about this. You know, one of my paid pretty good money to be in it. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. I'm not really interested. And, like I said on my podcast, like, all these people who boycotted, I'm not a boycott guy. I didn't drift away because of specifically that.
Mm-hmm.
That might be contributing to it. But all the people who have drifted away from the NFL, the problem the NFL is about to have is people are going to realize they don't miss it all that much.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're not all that hyped. You know, even if the NFL does everything to get these people back, right, they might say, yeah, you know, it just turns out I don't need to spend 11 hours every Sunday watching football, you know?
Yeah, dude, I remember I was telling somebody, I've said it on my show before, when Lady Bird went into wide release, I went to go see it on a Sunday afternoon. Like, I didn't, like, care. Like, the total antithesis of the NFL. Like, I went to go see that movie. And I had a good time. But it was just, I just kind of just been disenchanted with sports for quite some time. And I think I told that to my dad, like, 3 or 4 years ago. And I was kind of afraid to tell him. To where I was like, oh, isn't football kind of boring? And he was like, yeah, it is. You know?
Yeah.
Like, and I just kind of don't like how the players are treated now. Like in the, and not only just in the NFL, but obviously in the NCAA, where it's just like, there's no, like, they're making so much money off the backs of these people. And I was disappointed in hearing, like, last night, Tubby Smith talking about basketball, like, college players transferring. It's like, oh, you're teaching them to quit. You're teaching these kids how to quit. And yeah. He's, like, left. He's went from team to team, and he's made so much money off of the backs of these kids. And he's, like, yeah, talking shit about them.
It's not teaching kids how to quit. A lot of kids who transfer are transferring because they're not getting playing time.
Right.
They're literally transferring because they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the whole idea of quitting? I mean, you're quitting on this team, but you didn't choose that team. You chose that school. The coach recruited you, but he chose a team. He recruited all the other players.
Right.
So this idea that you must be blindly beholden to a roster assembled by Tubby Smith,
mm-hmm.
who would leave in a second, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, and who has left teams like that. So you're not quitting. You're actually, you care more. You want to play. You want to either get playing time because you just like to play, or the other thing, which I need to expose myself to pro scout, you know, all the other reasons that people transfer. Or let's say there's some other shit going on. Like you just hate that school. You hate your professors.
Yeah.
You hate the layout of the campus. You hate whatever. Maybe you just like the grass is greener. You know someone who goes to another school. You feel like that was a better fit for you. That's not quitting. That's improving your situation. Like this idea right. that you must suffer.
Yeah.
You know, everything, like adversity is supposed to be good, but not everything is adversity. Some things are just a shitty situation that you don't want to get out of. Right.
Yeah.
And that's coach speak. Like those coaches, it seems like whatever hardship you go through has to be then filtered into this notion of, well, it built your character,
mm-hmm.
and not everything builds character. You know, some things are just—it's just bullshit you have to deal with. Like you got a bunch of early classes with professors you hate. You're like, eh, this yeah. sucks. Maybe it's doing nothing for your character to do those things.
Yeah, it's just sort of the thing where like they're just kind of like they're just tone deaf when it comes to those things. Like those guys are just like, oh, they're quitters. When these kids, like they mentioned this on, I think it was Israel Gutierrez and Dan Le Batard were talking about it on Highly Questionable, how like these, some of these kids commit to these schools when they're 14 or 15 and 16. And then they're men at 18, you know, when they're literally just kids, you know, they're literally kids and they, you know, they make these decisions and they get pissed at them when they change their minds. And they're just not allowed to grow and evolve, which is it just pisses me off. And then like now I think the NBA is trying to do something with the G League and trying to make that an alternative from college. Because I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think the college system is antiquated. Mm-hmm. It's like it's dead, but they don't know it yet.
Yeah.
You know, like I sometimes, like I used to feel this way. I don't know why I relate this back, but when I used to walk around New York sometimes, I would feel like I'm in a ghost town because I was just like a loner, you know, walking through parts of Queens or whatever, just feeling like I was all by myself in a town full of people, you know?
Hmm.
And it was like, oh, this is like a ghost town, and I'm the only one that sees this for some reason. It's kind of like that. It's like the college, they're circling the drain. You know, they don't know it yet. They haven't gone into like panic mode with it yet, but it's happening. You know, it's going to happen at some point. If it's not the G League, it's going to be something else.
Yeah.
It's going to be some other venture. There might be a failed venture or two, and then someone will get it right. Some kind of legit minor league. The NBA seems to be getting more progressive.
Yes.
You know, politically and also with the idea of not being beholden to this college thing and the one and done rule and the education's important and all these things that no one cares about in other sports, including the fans.
Right.
So it's going to be dead at some point, or it'll just be diminished. It'll just be more like other college sports. You know, it's not going to be multi-billions of dollars being generated anymore.
Yeah.
Unless they change. I mean, they can change, but they have to give the players. There was a good article on Deadspin, I think today or yesterday, about paying athletes. And it was just kind of breaking down why all the arguments against paying them were frankly, they were stupid, you know. But the people in charge, I guess, they still have this notion that they want to maximize their own profits. That's what it comes down to.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, like, they can still all make a profit. You can pay athletes and everyone still makes money. It's this greed of, we want to make the most money.
Yeah.
The people who should be paid the most are getting zero.
Right.
And even under the provisions that people are putting out there of, like, well, let's give them, like, $5,000. They're still the people who should be getting paid the most getting next to zero, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because, like, the most of them are black or what when it comes to the money-making sports, but I think all of them should get something, like, because the school is making money off of, maybe the lacrosse team isn't making as much as the basketball or football team, but I'm sure they're generating something, and they're generating some interest where money's being spent and the school is gaining profit off of them. It's just... I just feel disenchanted about all of it. Like, I don't know. It's just, and I felt like this, like, for quite some time, where when you're a kid, when you're playing Bill Walsh college football on your Genesis, when you're 12 years old, you don't know that shit. You just know, oh, this guy's good in the pageantry and all the shit that they sell you, and you get excited about it. And, you know, you're having a good time because you're a fucking kid. You don't know. And then you just get older and you just get a little, hopefully a little wiser, and just like, this is fucking bullshit. But, like, you can always, like, find the negative in anything, but it's hard for me to watch and to really consume. And it's just like, I haven't really paid much attention to when the Heisman Trophy race happens. I'm just like, okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm drifted away completely from college sports. Like, I used to watch college basketball when they were closer to my age. When I was, like, around college age, I liked it more. And as I grew older, I never went off to college, and I don't have, like, a rooting interest in any particular school either.
Right.
So that's part of it. Because there are some, like, you know, 50-year-olds who still, you know, pull out their old Michigan State sweatshirt because they went there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're still kind of tied to it. I don't have anything tying me to it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm just, like, for me, it's just been like, I can't connect to college sports. All this, you know what it is, all these things with paying athletes or letting them transfer or giving them any kind of agency, the argument against it always boils down to tradition. It's a tradition.
Right.
You know, this is how we've always done it. And I've never, not just with sports, but in general, I've never liked tradition as an argument.
Mm.
This is the way we always did it, so it's good enough for me. You know, like, I'm not going to tell kids they have to go to a record store either.
It's true. That's
because that was,
you
know, like, you know, people, like, they grab their belt and, you know, wiggle it around. This is how we always did it. And I don't give a fuck. That doesn't mean it was right. You know?
That's true. But then at the same time, there's part of me that has a little bit of envy when I talk to somebody that went to a big school, you know, like, I went to a big school. Oh, when you were there, who was playing football or who was playing basketball? Did you go to the game? I always ask about that. I mean, I went to a small liberal arts college that got the shit kicked out of them by Mateen Cleaves and Mo Peterson in the NCAA.
Yeah.
Like, that was pretty neat. But, I always kind of envy that a little bit and wish that I could have been a part of that. And maybe one day, like, I like when Bill Burr talks about, you know, he likes to go to all those college arenas and NBA. Like, I think that's pretty cool. Like, you know, but when you're speaking back to the record store, like, one of my things, like, I don't know, that's ever since, I don't know, I guess maybe it's been since I was a kid, but I remember when I was living in Chicago, I used to go to this place called Reckless Records, and I would go there sometimes after church when I went to church. Ooh, God. When I went, and I would go, I would go there and like listen to music and stuff and go through the CDs and all that stuff. And I remember being in, when I did this festival in Cleveland about 3 years ago, and they had this used record, CD, tapes. I bought some comedy albums. They had an old Nintendo. That was just fucking cool to me. I think that was probably the coolest shit that I did in Cleveland. And I did stand up, obviously, but I went to this arcade, you know, and played Ninja Turtles and beat it, you know, and the fucking arcade. Like that, like to me, like some of that stuff, I don't know, it's just something about going into a record store that's cool to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it works for you, but you would never, like, require that to be the way.
No.
You know what I mean? And that's the other thing, too, is, like, in this era that we're in, the era of social justice, when people are sort of calling out all kinds of unfair treatment.
Yeah.
And athletics is, you know, it's teeming with unfair treatment. Sure. Professional and amateur.
Right.
So whereas in the past it would be like, yeah, but they're making a lot of money, or in college, in the case of college, it'd be like, yeah, but they're getting laid every night, they're going to parties, you know. You just sort of explain it away like, oh, a little bit of unfairness is no big deal. And now I think in the current climate it's like all unfairness is bad.
Right. Right.
You know, and we're gonna call it out, we're gonna make noise about it, and you can't hide behind what you used to hide behind. You know, they make a lot of money, or they get a free education, and all these ultimately hollow arguments.
Yeah. Cause since we're kind of heading over into this, I want to come back. I want you to talk about the Wizards a little bit and John Wall, but since we're kind of in football right now, I wanted to get your thoughts on how you felt about, so Michael Bennett got traded, to the Eagles this afternoon. Yeah. We're recording this on March 7th. But when the initial report came out, they said that Michael Bennett is being shopped in order to quiet things down in Seattle. And Richard Sherman was going around seeing his homies, texting people, like saying his goodbyes to his teammates, because he thought that he wasn't going to play with the Seahawks anymore. And what did you think about that? Like, as far as, you know, like the Michael Bennett thing, everything, like, because the Seattle players are known in around the league to be woke.
Among the most woke. They have the most woke team, and maybe a pretty woke coach who gives them leeway to say and do what they want and all that stuff.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the truth is of that, but it just goes to show, like, Michael Bennett is still, like, a good player, a sought-after player.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, look at a guy like Kaepernick, who, you know, was a guy who was a backup who got to play again his last year, two seasons ago. And so he wasn't quite a star anymore. And they just cast him aside. And, you know, a guy like Michael Bennett, a team will still take him. And so you wonder, like, how much of a chilling effect does it have when a superstar comes out? And, like, he's not a superstar at this point, but, you know, let's say a superstar came out and started kneeling and started openly talking about things the way Michael Bennett does.
Right.
Or Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman is, you know, roughly superstar level. And I don't know if he's untradeable, but if that's true, that it's like, you know, trying to quiet things down, then it just goes to show you that really no one's safe unless you're Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, you know, one of the five untouchables in the NFL.
Right.
You know, there aren't that many.
Go ahead.
I don't know if it's going to shut him up. I mean, you know, he's never been the type to be beholden to. He's like, what, probably 33 at this point? He's been around for a while.
Yeah, he's in his 30s.
Yeah, so it's like he's not going to, at this point, change. And if someone's expecting him to change, he could probably just walk away if he ever wanted to.
Yeah, because I think, he's 32 and he's got 3 years and roughly $27 million remaining on his contract, which contains outs in 2019 and 2020. Should his next team choose it, it doesn't want to see out the entirety of the deal. So he's a stud. He's still a really good player. And he did tweet like free Meek Mill when he found out. Like it's like a picture of him. Let me see if I can find it. Go to his Twitter. Like there was a picture. Because I did see it was a picture of him in an Eagles, you know, like a photoshopped Eagles jersey.
Yeah.
And he's like free Meek Mill.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because they have, I mean, Chris Long is on the Eagles,
mm-hmm.
who is very outspoken.
Right.
And they've had players that knelt or did the raised fist during the anthem. I don't think they did it during the Super Bowl, but they've had players that have done that, you know, just during the season. And it seems like that team has a culture that would be open to a guy like Michael Bennett. Like the Texans, apparently their owner is saying, I'm not going to sign any players who knelt, mm-hmm. you know. But the Eagles aren't like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how. Either he's, I don't know if he's going to be, he's going to maybe quiet things in Seattle, but he's going to amplify things in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I don't think Seattle is going to be quiet now. They still got players who, I don't think that he was just leading those other guys like Richard Sherman and they'd be lost without him.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder where those stories come from. Is that like maybe taking a shot at players? Like, see, this might happen to you, you know, if you, you don't shut your mouth.
Yeah, this you're going to get traded to a Super Bowl winning team.
Right, to live in Philadelphia.
Yeah, like I don't know. You get to watch Joel Embiid and when you're off and Ben Simmons. I don't know. Like it should be. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it'll be interesting. They just charged their team up. They just got another great player on their defense. So
yeah,
That's Seattle's loss. I wanted to go back. Oh no! Before we go back to that, what do you think about the Papa John's NFL dropping Papa John's like that sponsorship and stuff?
See, I don't. The thing with Papa John's is, I feel like they were doing damage control when Papa stepped down. Whatever his name is, John Schnatter. Mm-hmm. I think when he stepped down, it's because they were like, "Oh shit, we might lose our NFL money." But, I mean, just go to the show. You can't talk shit about the NFL as a sponsor and get away with it. I mean, he was talking shit about, like, shit talking might be the wrong term. I guess he's not, like, a shit talker. But what did he say? He just said our sales are down because of kneeling for the anthem or something like that?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, which isn't really a shot at the NFL, but it kind of is. Like, they're not going to stand for that. Like, you can... There's a million pizza places that would step right in, or at least two other ones.
Yeah. Like,
you know,
I think like pizza, like there, I think Pizza Hut's Twitter said something. And then like, I remember when the shit went down, like I tweeted DiGiorno's is greater than Papa John's and they favorited right. the tweet. And they were like, they said something like tweet of the day. It's somewhere on my Instagram, but fuck, like you can go anywhere and get pizza and people, I don't know what it is, man, but like there's a thing. I don't know. It's a thing on Black Twitter where like they shit on. I think it's just no. You know what, though? I'm going to change this. I think the internet, like they try to shit on like chain restaurants. Some of that shit's pretty deep. Dude, I ordered Pizza Hut for the Super Bowl. It was fucking good.
Well, that's what I found to be interesting when Papa John's, when the owner of Papa John's said those things and all these people on Twitter were like, Papa John's, it should taste like ketchup on a cracker.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, it doesn't. It's pretty good. You know,
yeah,
like,
it is.
It's tasty pizza and it's pretty cheap and they deliver. Like you don't have to, it's like when a guy asks a girl out and she says no. And he's like, well, you were ugly anyway. I never want to talk to you.
Yeah.
It's like, you're just full of shit now. You're lying.
Yeah.
And so all these people are like, Papa John's it tastes like piss anyway. I never liked that shit.
Right.
Like, I never heard you say that before. Like, if you would have come to my house to watch, let's say, a Mayweather fight, and I had Papa John's pizza.
You would have ate that shit.
Yeah, you would have said, well, this is fucking piss.
Right.
You know? You would have eaten it. And so, like, there's a little bit of posturing that went on with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just trash everything about this because we don't like the guy. But, you know, I thought there was a lot of dishonest arguments being made against Papa John's. It's solid.
Yeah.
You know? It's a good pizza from time to time.
Yeah, and I even think, like, Pizza Hut, their wings are consistently good. Like, they're, I think they have Wing Street is their wing,
yeah,
they call it their subsidiary or whatever the fuck. It's,
yeah,
it's good. Like, it's not bad at all. Like, they shit on Domino's, all that stuff. Like, I don't get
it. Yeah, all those places are solid. Like, you know, people have this thing about chains. That was a big thing when I lived in New York. People hated chains, anything that was a chain. Except for, like, a New York-only chain. Then they were okay with it. Like, it's just a citywide chain. But I remember when 7-Eleven came in and people were like, chains, mm-hmm. go to 7-Eleven. I'm like, I'd rather go to 7-Eleven than that dusty-ass bodega on the corner with everything on the shelf is expired. Like, you know, the candy bars have the old packaging, the old font that they stopped using 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like 7-Eleven has standard. And then when Walmart was trying to come into New York, people blocked it because of the chain and it was going to, you know, put people out of business. But I was like, I'd kind of rather go to Walmart sometimes, you know, or Target.
Yeah. They're, I mean, cause they put a Target in, Atlantic Avenue station, there's a Target, I don't know, man, like there's all those retail stores around there, because it's weird how Brooklyn, well, it's not weird, but for the last, I've been in this area for over 10 years now, and it just to see that change where it's like, it's just become, Brooklyn is becoming low-key anywhere USA.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, well, where's the, you know, you obviously you see some of the culture that's around it, but it's just like slowly becoming the place where a lot of these people moved away from. Like,
yeah, look, it's like Southeast DC is becoming office buildings and Targets and shit like that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, all the people who live there, they've been getting pushed out toward into Maryland now.
Mm.
But, and it's not like Southeast had always a negative rap. It wasn't like Brooklyn where people were, you know,
Southeast
had a positive view of it. But it's still like it's turning into this cookie cutter grid of, you know, bike lanes and all this other shit.
Yeah.
And that's the way it goes. I don't know if that's progress or not. Mm-hmm. But it's when you need something and there's a Target, it sure is convenient. I mean, I remember when I lived in Astoria, it was like you had to go to, everything was a compromise. Like if you wanted a shower curtain, you had to go to the store near you that had them,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't have the right color. The color you wanted, they didn't have. Yeah, it's always some kind of compromise. You know, this was before people would just buy shit off Amazon anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so places like Target are more likely to have what you need. There was a guy that I used to temp with. He had this light bulb that was out. It's kind of an unusual shaped light bulb. And, you know, he took the bulb into like all these mom and pop hardware stores and no one had a replacement for it. No one.
Yeah.
And he finally made his way out to a Home Depot in like Queens or something. And he was like, they had like a shelf full of this bulb.
And he found it. Yeah. Like,
yeah. It was like, it took 5 minutes in the store to get it. So,
yeah,
you know, like there's definitely some convenience to having that stuff around. I mean, I can't speak too much to the, you know, taking out the mom and pops and destroying Main Street and shit like that. I'm sure there's an effect, but you know, I still go in those stores.
Yeah. I like that, the convenience of it. I had a buddy that, I hung out with last weekend, he met me for a drink at Hooters, and he lives in, the Bronx, like in Riverdale, and he was just coming to do something. He said, oh, let's meet up. And so I said, oh, just meet up at Hooters because it's right by the bridge or whatever. And so he came and said, man, you guys got a Cheesecake Factory, all this shit over here, man. So he's fucking, I was like, yeah, man, Jersey's not bad. I was just telling somebody, like, Jersey, we have trees, we have like parking. Like there's a lot of there's cool shit. It's not, you know, it's not just the intro to The Sopranos. It's pretty decent.
Right. No, there's quality of life there.
Yeah. Like, cause it's, I always tell people, I was like, yeah, you can, I like going into the city, living my dream, doing shows, auditioning, occasionally getting to shoot something and going back to Jersey. Like there's a, there's a little bit of serenity that's kind of involved, where it's like super quiet, and it's cool, it's chill, it's not crazy. I wanted to go back to, because one of the most profound things that you've ever said to me about sports was that the DC area doesn't know how to treat stars. And yeah. Now I feel like that's kind of happening with John Wall, where I think he's still injured now. And now, like, Gortat, or they were saying, like, oh, we're having so much more fun now and all this shit. I don't know what their record is. I can go to that. But how do you feel? Yeah. How long is that relationship with John Wall and the Wizards going to last?
See, I don't, and that's the thing, like, he's practicing now again, apparently, but he's not going to play for a couple more weeks.
Okay.
And I think he wants to stay in D.C. This is the problem with D.C. Like, they push people out. Like, a lot of the people who are pseudo sports stars, they kind of like it here. And the city just starts shitting all over him for some, I don't even know why they do that. They just don't know how to handle star players. Any star player, anyone who's got, like, commercials on TV, except for maybe some of the white ones, like Ovechkin can do commercials.
Okay.
And even Bryce Harper does a magazine cover, and people are like, what's he doing? You know, RG3, when he was setting the league on fire, was doing Subway commercials. They hated the fact he was so big commercial. He should be studying film. It's like, what, do you want to be a robot? Like, he doesn't have an hour to go film a Subway commercial.
Jesus.
Or a couple hours. Like, you know, like, and because they just traditionally haven't had stars. And then here comes John Wall, who is a star, legit star. And for the most part, they've treated him well. Early on, though, and this was an issue that I had with sports fans early on, like, for his first 3 years. These dumbass DC sports fans were like, he's a bust, trade him. He's a bust.
Yeah.
He was hurt a lot. You know, he wasn't great his first couple of years, but, you know, he was still kind of learning. And they wanted him to be, it's kind of like when you hear a song once and you're like, that song sucks. You know, like, you like, give it a chance and let it grow on you a bit.
Yeah.
But he was getting that treatment from the fan base early on. Like, they were calling him a bust after like half of the season when he was hurt. You know, so they don't know what the fuck you're talking about. The fans don't, in a lot of those cases. But then, like, he's had this, I don't know if it's his personality or what, because there was this thing about him and Bradley Beal where they didn't like each other, but they seem to like each other. They're always dapping each other up and sitting next to each other on the sidelines, and seems like they're having a good time together, so I don't know. I don't know where that came from, but one thing that's consistent is, like, the team doesn't circle the wagons around their star players. Mm-hmm. So they let these stories get out, and they don't really refute the stories. You know, these stories about John Wall and people don't like him and he's a ball hog and shit like that. There's no, like, general manager giving a statement saying, I don't know what you're talking about. He's our guy and we're rolling with him, you know, for the rest of his career. Those statements don't come out. In fact, and traditionally when Wes Unseld was a GM, it was like the opposite. He'd be like, these young thugs, you know, they need to get their shit together, you know, and he trades Chris Webber for no reason.
Yeah.
But, like, the whole thing now, like, I think it was a misunderstanding. So John Wall gets hurt, and then the team adopts this this attitude of we need to play the team, because John Wall's not here to basically bail us out when we're not playing as a team. They get a couple wins, and then, you know, basically Gortat said something along the lines, it was some hashtag team win or whatever. They have this slogan now, everybody eats.
Right.
You know, whatever it takes to get you through that. And then they started winning, and then people were saying that John Wall is done because they're winning without him. And then they lost a couple. You know, so, you know, the honeymoon is over. They absolutely need John Wall. I don't even understand this whole idea that they're better. In the playoffs, they're definitely going to need him because they don't have anyone to go to at the end of games.
Yeah.
You know, Beal has never been a clutch guy. Beal, sometimes he'll get the last shot and he'll miss terribly. Like, he'll be way off to the left or right, or it'll come up like 2 feet short. Like, I don't know what it is. He just doesn't have that clutch thing. that, and John Wall does, at least more so. Mm-hmm. And the whole problem with John, with the Wizards is, for the last probably 3 or 4 years, it's like clockwork. They'll build like a 12-point lead, and then John Wall will go sit down and take a rest, and by the time he comes back in the game, they're down 3. And then he'll stay in the game, they'll build up like a 7-point lead, and then he'll go take a rest, and he comes back in, they're down 1. And they need to learn how to win, like, when he's not on the court.
Right.
And he was hurt earlier this year. They didn't go on a winning streak. He's been hurt several times throughout his career. They didn't go on a winning streak. This is just a random winning streak one time when he got hurt. And at least maybe they figured out a way to play well when he's not on the floor. So when the playoffs come, it's not going to be that typical Wizards heartbreak. Hey, we were up by 20 in the second quarter, and then they lose. You know, this happens all the time. Like, that's kind of the MO on the Wizards. Fourth quarter, they lose the lead, no matter what.
Yeah. Because, you know, the reason what made me like John Wall a lot was I've liked him since he came into the league, and I was happy that he got drafted by the Wizards. But I think he said a few years ago, or relatively 2 or 3 years ago, he said they interviewed him after a game. He was like, "I'm not used to losing. I work hard all day, and I work hard all the time. We need to do this. We need to be better. Blah blah blah." Yeah. And it just seems like the team, like, they didn't really give a shit, but he still gives a shit. And
yeah.
And that's kind of the vibe that I get from him. And in the playoffs last year, when he was busting his ass. And they're like, "Oh, John Wall's not contributing. Like, he was missing shots." Because he was probably fucking tired for doing everything.
Right. Exactly. And also the whole everybody eats thing. Like, maybe some people shouldn't be eating. You know, like, like, I mean, how many touches should Gortat be getting? Like, is the team really better when he gets, you know, 8 more touches a game? Like, there's a reason he's not eating that much sometimes.
Right. You know, I always had this theory, like, in football, your tight end cannot be your best offensive player. And in basketball, your point guard should not have to score a shit ton of points in order for you to win.
Right.
And I just feel like that's what the Wizards need, somebody else that's gonna really contribute.
Well, the thing about Wall, and I don't know if it's true, like, this year, but I know even in his first couple years when he was, like, scoring 13 points a game and getting 6 turnovers, you know, because he was a rookie or a second-year player. Mm-hmm. Even though that was the case, his numbers were not good. When he was on the floor, the team was more efficient. Like, the plus-minus when he was on the floor was always really high. Yeah. All the other categories for all the other players went up. So even though he's having, like, statistically a bad game, it's beneficial to have him on the court.
Right.
And then when he would go take a rest, even though the backup point guard wouldn't be turning the ball over, they wouldn't be as good of a team because defense would have to key on John Wall so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, when he comes back, provided he's healthy, he doesn't come back too soon, like Isaiah Thomas or something,
right,
they're going to be a better team. And they might even lose a couple at the beginning of him coming back because they got to readjust. And people are going to be like, "Oh, trade him. Bust. He's bust. There's too many commercials because they got a shoe line. Oh, this shut up and study film," you know, all the dumb shit that idiot sports fans do. And yeah, well, you're going to miss him when he's gone, you know, force him out of town, see what happens.
Right.
See how good that team is. See how the Bradley Beal Wizards do.
Yeah.
You know, the Otto Porter is not a leader. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They've said has he stepped his game up though? Has he, like, gotten better?
Yeah, I think he's stepped up. I mean, they've all stepped up a bit.
But as a role player, not like he's going to fucking take over the league, but just as a role player, I was hearing that he was. Because I haven't gotten to watch. I love the idea of watching basketball, but sometimes I just fall asleep. Like, the NBA channel is my favorite channel pretty much on television. I watch it. I could fall asleep watching it and all that stuff. But I don't really get to watch as much basketball as I like. But, yeah, I just don't like when people try to shit on John Wall. I'm not a fan of that.
People act like he's a detriment to the team, and they were, what are you watching?
Yeah. You know, I want to close on this. I want to close on Common. So I'm watching the Oscars a couple nights ago, and because I'm only really watching it because I did a appearance on a podcast, and we recapped it and whatnot. But normally, yeah. I like to make my picks, and I like to see who wins and all that stuff. I enjoy it. So I'm watching Common do like piece performing with someone. I think it's Audra Day or whatever. And I saw a tweet from Dan St. Germain, very funny comedian,
yeah,
writer on Jermaine Fowler's show, Superior Donuts. He wrote, he was like, Common is corny. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, my because Common is in my top five. He's in my top five. To me, he's one of the greats, one of my all-time favorite MCs.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I think I tweeted something like, oh no, Dan, please. Or let me see exactly what I wrote. I'll find
it. Oh, you replied to him?
Yeah, like I did a quote tweet thing. And
Let's
see what I wrote. I'll find it. It's here somewhere. Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm in the wrong. I'm going to find this shit. Just bear with me a moment. You know, every time I try to find something, it's always hard. It's always like a fucking shit show here. I said, oh my God, where the hell is it at? I said something like, please delete this. I said, oh my God, what is wrong with me? I can't even find it now. He said,
what are you searching on his Twitter feed?
I'm on TweetDeck, and I'm trying to find. Oh, Dan. Oh, this is okay. He said, Common is. he said, Common is so fucking corny. And then I quoted his tweet, and I said, oh, Dan, please delete this. And he said, and then I saw Dan St. Germain is a white comedian. And I saw another white guy responding to his tweets like, oh, yeah, I know. He's totally corny. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, one of the best MCs ever. And
right.
I got mad because, like, part of me got mad because he said that. The other half of me was like, oh, he's a white guy. What the fuck does he know? What does Dan St. Germain know about hip-hop? And he's never tweeted anything about hip hop that I know of. And I was so angry. And then I saw another comedian, Sam Morril. Shout out to Sam Morril, who's funny. And he said something about like Common needs to stop. What the fuck is this? And I was
I think there was it Very Smart Brothers that had an article about
Common
doing dad rap.
Yeah, and see, I think, and you guys on Three Guys on your podcast, you guys say, you know, like, oh, like the running joke is like the whole trying to raise a daughter is from Common. Like he's always talked about, at least since Retrospect for Life or the
One Day. Yeah, once he had a daughter, yeah.
Yeah, he was all like raising my daughter, but, you know, like I think he's a great MC and people, and it wasn't just these two white dudes. It was black dudes that I was seeing writing about this. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, he's corny now? Like, he can't evolve. Like, he can't just, like be, like, an evolved person. Yeah, he's at the Oscars. Do you think he's going to do, like, the 1995 Lonnie shit at the Oscars?
Well, the thing is, he might be a little corny, but...
Oh, Andy, no.
Yeah. Well, hear me out.
Oh, my God.
He's probably in my top five, too.
Okay.
We're in new territory with 40-something rappers.
Yeah.
You know, Jay-Z broke some new ground with, like, you know, grown man rap, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
With 444. People call rock bands corny when they get into their mid-40s, too. It happens all the time.
Now, see, that's why I wanted to talk to you about that. Do white artists like rock stars, like I did a show yesterday in the Conversation podcast, and we talked about it for a little bit, but we didn't, like, a guy like Snoop, a guy like Ice Cube, it seems like they've been given more latitude to grow or to be, you know, but I don't know, like to grow into being a family man or someone that's like and still accepted. But it just seems like Snoop just kind of maintained. I don't know. It just seems like he's it seems like him, Ice Cube, Ice-T, like they're not called, they don't get called corny.
I feel like Ice Cube had a short period when he was doing family comedies when people were, this is maybe before Twitter was as big,
sure,
or even around, and people were saying that, and then he sort of just stuck around, and people stopped saying that again.
Okay.
You know, and he wasn't doing anything like the Oscars, which, I mean, imagine how Ice Cube would have to present himself at the Oscars, but
right.
This is Common's, like, second time around doing the Oscars, and, you know, it's almost like a formula for him now, you know, when he,
yeah,
when he performs these kinds of songs, it's like, you know, the whispered, the hushed tone delivery, and, you know, we gotta overcome the struggle, and then, like, he'll put his fist up, but not all the way, you know, and,
but not all the way,
yeah,
oh,
not all
man.
The way, and, you know, it's palatable, and, like, he's not the rebel he was. He stopped drinking. I think a lot of his earlier stuff, you know, he had made references to how he got to stop drinking. You know, I think Questlove has said a couple times that, you know, Common was a kind of a surly drunk,
yeah,
for a time back in the mid-90s, and he would not hold back. You know, he would call people out, just randomly taking a shot at, like, Missy Elliott for no reason, you know, mm-hmm, like on the song or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, that dude, he was hungry, and he was probably, you know, lashing out for a variety of reasons. And now, you know, he's got a daughter. She's probably grown at this point.
She's in college, but, yeah. He said on Questlove Supreme, like, she's in college now and all that, yeah.
Yeah, and he's not, like, trying to raise a daughter anymore, but he is a 40-something dude who's not that raging 20-something anymore.
Right.
You know, and, like, just, like, I'm a huge Pearl Jam fan. Eddie Vedder, who also sang at the Oscars, he's a happy guy now. He's not that furrowed brow, looking down in every interview, raging against things because he's got turmoil, inner turmoil guy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who will sort of say, like, what happened to him? You know, you look at comments on, you know, videos and things. Although I think Pearl Jam has kind of pushed through now to get back into acclaim again. You know, they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now. And people appreciate them again. When there was a time when it was like, man, he's got corny. Like, there's a little bit of that going on.
Well, you said
sure.
You said another great thing to me in music, about music. One time we were hanging out after a show at the Draft House. I think it was like after a Green Room show, RIP.
Yeah.
And we got a burrito that time. And we were talking about music, and you're talking about like rock music, where it's just like, some of these guys, they get older and they just sort of they lose that testosterone. They change.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, most of the time these guys change for the better. I listened to Bill Burr talk to some of his favorite musicians, and they're older guys in their 60s. And they're like, yeah, who did Burr have on the past couple weeks? I'll find it for you. I'm sure you would know who they are. Just bear with me a moment here. Find it. Last week he talked to Kenny Aronoff.
Kenny Aronoff
and Al Jurgensen.
What band are they from?
Kenny, let's see. Hold on here. Hold on.
Al Jurgensen. That name sounds familiar.
Aronoff.
Now I'm Googling it.
Okay. Sideman.
Oh, he's from Ministry. He's the guy from Ministry. Okay.
Okay, yeah. And then Al.
That's Al. Al is from Ministry.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know if Kenny is too. Drummer, Kenny Aronoff.
Mellencamp.
Oh, okay. I know who that guy is. Yeah.
Leonard Skinner, Bo Deans, Sticky Fingers.
Yeah, shaved head, bald guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, he's talking to these guys, and they're like, oh, you know, when people, like, when they have roadies and stuff, when they go on tour, some of the young guys think it's going to be like it was in the not books that were written about, like, the memoirs and stuff, like, from the past, and they could think it's going to be one thing, but it's like, no, It's not like that anymore. These dudes are older, and you have an idea of like when you listen to these. And I just think like Common, I don't mind the evolution because he was somebody that was all in, was kind of that dude who used to talk about, used to say faggot a lot, and then like in 02 when Electric Circus came out, people didn't like that one. That album a lot, but it was actually fucking great on when he toured it with that band. Yeah. It was fucking awesome. He had that record Between Me and You. He's talking about like finding liberation and shit through one of his friends' sexuality. Like he found out one of his friends was gay or some shit like that. I'm not trying to be dismissed. Some shit like that. Fucking gay. But like,
whatever.
But you know what I mean? But like, he's like a guy that always seemed to be evolving. And like, I didn't find it odd for him to like be at the Oscars. And then at the same time, he's given us like, even if you just started from after Can I Borrow a Dollar, like you get, you have Resurrection, you have One Day It'll All Make Sense. You have like Water for Chocolate. You have B. Some records on Finding Forever, like that's five albums. Like how many artists, how many rappers, let alone like musicians, give you five really good albums? Even if you just kind of say Finding Forever is so-so, but five of them, like you can't just let that part of his catalog say this guy's fucking great. Whatever he does right now after that, it's fucking icing on the cake.
Well, and he's also not 100% dedicated to rap at this point. You know, he's acting, he's doing other things, which probably pays a lot better.
Yeah, and we didn't, and you know? so when I was doing in the conversation with Damian Lemon and Ali Muhammad, I was doing their show, and I didn't get to mention that he has this album coming out this week with Robert Glasper and Kareem Riggins called August Green. It's like this little collective that they've got. Like it's three of them, and then they kind of got other guys working with them, and they had a Tiny Desk concert. I didn't get to listen to it all yet. I listened to two records off. It sounds good, but it's still like more of that grown man shit. I'm interested in hearing the whole thing, but it's like the guy can still fucking do it. You know what I mean?
Well, the problem with the grown-up, the grown man thing, and this is what we had talked about, I think, in the Draft House, and this happens to rock bands too. They lose a sense of excitement when they're not trying to prove themselves anymore, and the testosterone's not flowing anymore. You don't see the big flourishes anymore. Yeah. You don't see I'm going to talk about Missy Elliott. You know, you don't see those kinds of moves. What happens a lot of times is they become better musicians.
Yeah,
but sometimes better. As a musician will hear something and say, wow, that's really good. And you and I will hear something, we're not musicians, and we'll be like, that sounds kind of boring. And they'll be like, no, that's super complicated. It just sounds like it's not.
Yeah.
And they get better at staying in the pocket. They get better at kind of making themselves smaller and serving the song.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have those big moments anymore. You don't have the I'm putting my dick on the table kind of moment.
Yeah,
and with rock bands, you don't have the big show-off guitar solo. Like, look what I can do! Look, listen, I'm good at this thing.
Yeah,
you know, because you've done that for 20 years, and so now you just kind of, no, this song doesn't need a solo. Let's just stay in the pocket for the whole song, and it'll be a nice melody and a nice song and a good chorus. But there's something not exciting about it. And I think the Roots have had that issue with their last couple albums, where it's like, we're gonna stay in the pocket. It's good musicianship. Everything's where it's supposed to be, you know, everything's in the right place.
Yeah.
But it's kind of has a little bit of boredom to it. And sometimes you need that big dumb guitar solo or that big dick slinging verse where you know, not just like the typical braggadocious shit, but just the you know, I'm going to assert myself, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want him to go stage diving at the Oscars, you know, that's over the top, but
yeah.
There is something that gets lost when you get a little older, and the way it reflects itself in music is just you don't do those big, exciting flourishes anymore because you're not trying to prove yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's across the board when musicians get into their 40s, with, you know, very few exceptions probably, where they're probably better at their instruments, like objectively, you know, they've if you're a singer, you probably now had a couple decades of voice lessons, or you have a voice teacher or coach, and so you learn to control your voice better, and maybe lyrically you've gotten better at conserving your words and all that stuff, but something also is missing. Mm. You know, all these things you've gained over the years, you've also lost something. Mm. And that's that youthful excitement thing. I mean, I did this video that I watch probably once a month. It's Black Star on like Planet Groove on BET back in the late 90s, probably.
Okay.
And it's Mos Def, Talib Kweli, and Common comes out. They do three songs. They really like to do a little bit of two songs, and then Common comes out and they do Respiration.
Okay.
It's like a 9-minute clip. And that clip is full of excitement. Like, there's just excitement all over the place in that clip. They're happy to be there. You know, there's something about, like, you can tell they're a hungry young trio of rappers, even though Common had a couple albums out already. But they're like, we're going to kill this shit, you know?
Yeah.
We're going to have a legendary performance. And there's a lot of stuff like that with Pearl Jam, where Eddie Vedder would climb up onto the rafters and then just dive into the crowd from 15 feet up, you know, risking his life, which obviously he's in his 50s. I don't want him to do that. But, like, stuff like that makes for those classic moments. And in the studio, you have moments like that where it's like, yeah, we're going to put this in there. We're going to put that in there. Put all that shit in there. And then now, when you get older, it's like, this song's too busy. Take that out. Take that out. Let's just sit in the pocket, you know? And that's nice, but it's not exciting sometimes. Mm-hmm. Listen to the way Black Thought raps on the more recent Roots stuff, and then listen to him rapping on that freestyle.
Yeah.
That freestyle was full of that excitement. It was, I'm proving myself. He basically said that in interviews. You know, mm-hmm. This is a moment for me. I was trying to have a moment. And it was kind of like that, the thing a 25-year-old might do when he gets on a show like that. And Black Thought had never been on that show. And that was like almost like a bucket list. Flex, Funkmaster Flex had never had him on to do a freestyle.
Yeah.
And he finally relented and put Black Thought on. And Black Thought was like, all right, I'm going to come over here. I'm going to salt this whole studio. You know, no one's going to be able to follow this.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is when you see those groups live, they still bring the excitement live. But when they get into the studio and it's time for new songs, they just sort of check out sometimes of that extra layer. You have to really tap into that. That 25-year-old, you're not that person anymore, but he's in there. He's under the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's good to tap into that dumb 20-something that you were for a little while to access that person, to bring excitement to what you're doing, you know, which is weird, but with comedy, I feel like comics get better when they get to their 40s, you know,
yeah.
They have more to say. They've got more life experience. They've got some calluses on them, you know, from just living life, and it makes its way into their comedy, and their comedy does get more exciting for me.
That's true.
Musicians, sometimes they sort of, some of their conscious decision is like, you know, let's strip it down a bit, you know?
Yeah.
There's a Rolling Stones song called Brown Sugar, which has some problematic lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered one of their classics, but, you know, the song is about drugs, and the lyrics are these weird sort of allegories to having sex with a slave, and it's supposed to be about heroin. And, you know, if you read the lyrics, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Mick Jagger has said, he had an interview probably when he was in his 60s, and he said, I wouldn't write that song today.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know what I was doing back then, but I was on this thing where I was trying to come up with this thing that combined sex and drugs and all these things, and that song came out. And basically, when you're older, you talk yourself out of that shit. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to sometimes not talk yourself out of that shit. And that's where guys like Common sort of, they get into that pocket of, you know, just halfway up kind of thing. And it's like, you know, just go bald out sometimes. Not at the Oscars. You're supposed to be corny at the Oscars. I don't know what people are expecting.
Yeah, that's because that's what Damian was saying, too. Like, he was kind of alluding to the same thing that you were saying. Like, he was saying, like, I just want to see him get grimy. Like, I just want to see that Rashid come out. And I was like, yeah, like, that's fun. Like, it's fine. But it's like, you can't do that at the Oscars. And part of me was just like, you know, even talking to Fonte, like when I talked to him a couple of years, like a year or two ago, about like, I asked him like, oh, have you noticed like I asked him, had he felt like he'd gotten better as a vocalist to where like, it's like, oh, this is a guy that can sing. Like he can sing. But then, like, I had seen him live, and then I was like, oh, God, he's gotten better. And he was like, yeah, you know, I was kind of just, like, treating my voice like an instrument now. Like, I'm taking care of myself. Like, he's like, I used to be like, oh, if I just rap and go hard, I can just, you know, I could just go hard and I can rap. But now, like, I got to take care of myself more. And I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then, like, I remember, so, like, last December, I went to see... And we're talking about, I know we're talking about men and all this stuff, but even an artist that's been in my consciousness for a little over 10 years now with St. Vincent, who I've watched like evolve, had, you know, really cool to watch her come up to where even watching her get better as a performer. Like I saw her, like you talk about those flourishes and everything. I don't think she's ever really lost anything. I don't know how that differs with a woman, with female performers, but I noticed just like an evolution in her work where like this album is like the critics are saying, like, I don't know that this is not my favorite album of hers, but I like it because it's almost like she sort of inhabits a character every time that she does a new project. But I see in her live, I noticed, like, I was like, okay, this show was great, but she did this one little flourish on the guitar that made me say, holy fucking shit. Like, it was just like a moment of that, for lack of a better term, like Nirvana that I had where I was like, oh my God, she's fucking brilliant. Have you ever had that, like, going to a show where you're seeing somebody, you're seeing one of your favorite artists, just like, I can't believe they fucking did that. And it was just like a little, like, you've known they always have been good and great, but it's like that little flourish, you're just like some next level shit that, like, it just resonates so much. I don't know.
Yeah, it's that show off, like, I'm going to show off for you guys right now kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like, a lot of those, even Pearl Jam now, and when you see them live, there's a good amount of that still.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes on the albums, there are moments, and I still like their albums a lot, but there are moments where it's like, you know, there's a guitar solo at the end of a song, and they'll just fade it out. It's like, well, what are you doing? Why are you fading that out? Like, I was looking at that.
Yeah,
And so it's something about maybe being in the studio, but live, they still, I mean, the crowd will sort of lift you up, and you're performing for them. So maybe you're going to show off a bit. Maybe it's different for women. If you look at Joan Jett now, she's in her 60s, and she still looks... like, you know, jet black hair, leather jacket. She hasn't, she's not dressing like a mom or anything.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of song she's writing, but I mean, it's probably a different path. I think testosterone is, has a lot to do with men when they get into their 40s, especially artists. Yeah. And, I don't know how, you know, with women, what the process is when they get older.
Yeah. Cause I think about someone like Erykah Badu, who I would say, you know, probably one of the best concert experiences that I've ever had.
Yeah.
Like, they're just, I don't know, maybe like because it's a woman and they're more grunt because they're, I have to sound fucking hippie-ish, but they're life givers, you know? Like, they're literally bringing life into the world, so they're more like connected and grounded. But like, yeah, I don't know how that works because female artists, like the last concert I went to, Rachel Yamagata, saw her in like upstate, kind of like upstate New York ish Daryl's house. Like, Daryl Hall has a club like in Westchester. Nah, it's not like Dutch, I think it's Dutchess County. Anyway, it's in Pauling, New York, and it's like just a small club, and Rachel Yamagata's a singer-songwriter that's had a lot of her shit on, like, TV shows and stuff, like, you know, but she's still kind of just a really, it's like, you can listen to her, one of her songs, like, oh, she's good, but then you see her live, you're like, holy fucking shit. And I've seen her, like back in 06, and very, like, self-deprecating. You wouldn't expect that from the subject matter of her songs, but anyway, just watching her perform, it was just like, stripped down. She was just like, I don't have a band with me. It's just me and my keyboard and me and my guitar. And it was just like this, maybe like a couple hundred people. And it was just, it was so powerful, man. It was just so, like, and then there was that grit. She's about 40. And it just seemed like there was more, there was a lot of confidence, but still, like, just, I don't know. It was just, it was a great performance. I don't know.
There's also another thing. This is something that happened, I mean, with, like, athletes, for example. Let's say you're an NBA player. Mm-hmm. By the time you're 40, your knees are shot, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not an NBA player, and I might have better knees than a guy who played in the NBA for 15 years and played college and years before that, too.
Yeah.
You know? So these people, when they're 40, 45, and they got famous when they were, like, 22 or whatever, mm-hmm. and they've seen some shit. They've been through a lot, and there's a lot in the entertainment industry that will sort of beat you down a bit, you know, right. and take right. a little bit of that, as Common said, make you lose intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's easy for me to say, man, if I was up there, I'd be showing off. And if I was in the studio, I'd be making epic 6-minute songs and shit like that.
Right.
But when you've done that already and you've gone through the ringer and you've been through all the bullshit, maybe you're like, yeah, I don't want to do any of that anymore. I've been there, done that. And for the fans to expect it might be a little bit unfair, you know?
Yeah.
Like I might have more of that drive to, if I was a professional musician right now, like starting, I would have more of that drive than a guy who's been doing it 20 years. Just like I'd have better knees than, you know, the Kemba Mutombo right now. Even though he's a world-class athlete,
right,
you know?
Right.
You know, yeah. I haven't damaged that part of myself or diminished it the way these people have. They've given all that out already.
Yeah, because it's just like, I just don't want the achievements that people like Common have made to just be, like, thrown away. Like, it's like, do you know who that yeah. fucking guy is?
Yeah, right.
Like
right. It's like looking at Shaq only when he was on, like, the Cleveland.
Right. It's just like, you know, just like, wait a minute. Like, because it's almost like, because even Jalen Rose said this once. He said, like, you know, we kind of have this microwave society, and this thing that this one person did was the best thing ever. And it's like, yeah. wait a minute. Let's put this into context, and let's, you know, it's kind of hard. Like I'm talking about Black Panther. Yeah, it was a good movie, but it's kind of like we're in it now, so it's kind of hard to really,
yeah,
to really put a stamp on it to say what it was. Like, because I even said, like, it's kind of like Black Star Wars in a way, and a couple people tweet, like, I don't know what the fuck are you talking about? This isn't even, like, they didn't even go into space. What the fuck, dude?
Right.
And I was like, and I'm trying, like, the cultural significance of it, where it was just like, we don't know what effect it's going to have on the youth, because we might be dead, you know, like,
yeah,
people
yeah.
that, so, but maybe, cause, you know, we like to label things in America. You know, it makes things right. easier for us, but it's an interesting thing. Like, I just kind of don't want those things to, like, fall by the wayside because of my, affection for his work, you know.
Well, there's got to be at some point a way to sort of accept 40 something rappers,
yeah,
you know, and 50 something rappers. There's no classic rap stations outside of satellite radio.
Yeah, maybe
every city has a classic rock station,
right?
You know?
And I think because and then you have some of these rappers that actually fucking live to be in their 40s.
A lot of, I mean, this is the first generation of rappers really who were in their 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And, rap has such a focus on youth that it's like, if there was a classic rap station, people wouldn't want to be played on it, probably.
Right.
You know, that would be considered corny rap.
It's sort of like, because definitely it is a young man's game, and I think maybe Jay-Z is making it a little more palatable for people to accept that content, the type of content, like 444 help, you know, because I hear a lot of people saying that this is Fonte's 444, his No News is Good News album, and it's like, well, he's kind of been like that, like, for quite yeah. some time, and there's a lot of artists that talk about it, but that, and again, that's the hipster in me that's like, well, he's always been doing it, You know, it's guys like him and Odyssey that, you know, shit. But then I'm biased when it comes to a guy like Fonte or Odyssey or Sky Zoo, the guys that are yeah. really like, you know, trying to carry on tradition and add their own and improve on the design of the industry of the craft, you know.
Yeah. And well, it's just rap is letting a lot of stuff in now that it didn't let in before. Like just among young rappers, just a little bit of gender bending, a little bit of more acceptance with, you know, gay or even maybe at some point trans rappers. Yeah. Maybe there are some out there. Or rappers who just aren't so caught up in masculinity or femininity and, you know, all that stuff. So that's being led by younger people, but
right.
people in their 30s who, you know, they're kind of caught in between. Like, they want Common, but they don't want 44-year-old Common.
Right. It's just
but they also don't want a little Uzi Vert either.
Yeah.
So,
it's like, well, listen,
they want
to
a guy
shit.
Who raps like Common, but who's still hungry, you know?
Well, I think there's Joey Badass for that. But
yeah. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Good. Yeah, I mean he's a skilled rapper. I have that one album.
His second one is good. His second one is good too. The All American Badass. That's one of the albums. That's probably one of the better hip hop albums of 2017. And it's just it's just a solid album. The guy is definitely a throwback, but he's also someone who has consciousness and he can just fucking rap his ass off. I think people just kind of, as great as Kendrick Lamar is, also I'm a hipster about him. I mean, I at least started listening to him like 8 years ago, like 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
And I think he's like just a special artist to me, to where it's like when I started comedy in like 2009 and he was like kind of on his come up, and I was like, yeah, fucking Kendrick Lamar, I'm kind of, you know, I'm going to be kind of like him. You know, all that shit where it's like you think,
yeah.
like his music like kind of fueled me, you know, like led me into, you know, comedy in a way. You know, it was just a part of my
right.
soundtrack at that time. But
right, right.
Yeah, so like it's definitely a thing. Like I think you helped me with that. You helped me sort that out. I mean,
Well, you know, there's a whole generation of rappers who are about to turn corny.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I just don't want to be that. And at the same time, I don't want to be that guy that's like listening to this new stuff. And I really don't like not even to just be an asshole about it, but it's just that music is not for me. These young Migos. Maybe they're not making that music for a 38 year old guy.
Right.
If I happen to like it, I happen to like it. Like, cause I will always, if I hear something and I'm out, I'll always Shazam it and be like, oh, that guy's pretty good. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's a good song. So I just don't want to be that old guy who's just like, well, these young kids, blah, 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 blah. Later for that shit.
Things were better when my generation was in charge.
Yeah.
And when we were in charge, the older people told us things were better when they were in charge. And, you know, you get caught up in that cycle.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, like I've said this before, but I'm of Generation X. Like I fit a lot of the stereotypes of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of my favorite artists are from that generation and have the biggest impact on me. But it's just a coincidence of the year I was born. I mean, I didn't just randomly have this particular personality and this outlook on life. Mm-hmm. The world affected me to develop that. Had I been born 20 years later, I'd be a millennial, and maybe I'd be more entitled and more narcissistic and taking selfies every 10 minutes, too. It's not like I independently became stereotypically Generation X.
Yeah.
You know, so I might be a somewhat stereotypical millennial. It's just the accident of when you were born. And it's hard to get mad at younger people when they really just are affected by the world they're in, just the way we were and the way generations before us were affected. And they got mad at younger people. How come you can't see the world like me? It's like, well, we were born in a different year.
Yeah.
You know, we came of age in a different way. And so once I kind of realized that, like, I'd probably be a millennial, like one of the people that I dislike now, had I been born in a different year. It's like, oh, okay, well, it's just the accident of birth. It has a lot to do with it.
That's the second time you said that, the accident of birth.
Yeah, the accident of birth. The accident of when you were born and where you were born, too. Like, you know, even if you grew up two streets down from where you actually grew up, you might have a completely different outlook on the world because of the people around you on that street. A lot of it's coincidence.
That's true.
And so, like, I thought about that, too. Like, growing up, like, if we moved to a different house on the other side of our neighborhood, I don't know who I'd be. You know, it might be a completely different person. I might have got into BMX racing or some shit. Who knows?
Yeah.
But whatever it is, it's like, you know, had I been born in 1994, I wouldn't have views in line with Generation X. It's not like I'm so high and mighty to think that way. But a lot of people do think that way.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wouldn't do that if I was 20. Yeah, you would. You know, you probably would. You'd be on Tinder and you'd be taking selfies and posting pictures of your food on Instagram and everything else, you know?
Yeah, I succumbed to a lot of that stuff too, but I had to take a selfie for a shoot that I'm doing tomorrow, and I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do look at my fucking face. Like, and then I was looking at this woman that I follow on Instagram, and she's like a friend or whatever, and she's hot, but it's like she takes a lot of selfies.
Yeah.
And they look the same, but she's hot, so whatever.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because sometimes to see, especially with, I think, women, because there's a woman that I see a lot of pictures from on Facebook, and it's like you always see the same side of her face.
Yeah.
Like her head is tilted the exact same way in every picture. It's like, oh, you think that's your good side.
Right.
You know?
But it's all good, baby.
Right. Like, you know, you got some other sides that I like too.
Hey-o.
But it's like, every picture's got to have the same look in your eye, look on your face. You're staring to the middle distance with your head turned slightly.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? What's the point of new pictures? Just re-up the old one.
Right. It's the same fucking picture. Well, Andy, this has been awesome, man. Plug any of your dates and your podcast. This will go up on Sunday.
Sunday. Okay. So. All right, so that changes things. Well, the podcast is threeguyson.com, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Me and Randolph Terrence, who was just on your podcast.
Yes.
And usually we'll have a third person, a guest, a sock puppet. Different, kind of rotates every week. Sometimes it's Chris Lambert.
Yeah, sometimes. I have not been in studio. Well, technically I did a Woke Files, but I did two Woke Files, but I haven't done like a real sit-down. And since the last time you guys clowned me for when that girl broke up with me.
Yeah, well, next time you're in town, you can just show up.
Yeah, we'll make it happen. No, we'll definitely make it happen. I just haven't really been around. But, we'll make it happen.
But, on my calendar in D.C. on Friday the 16th, uh-huh. I'll be at Shaw's Tavern, which I believe starts at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
And then on Saturday the 17th, I'm at Jammin' Java in Vienna, Virginia, which starts at 9:30. It's like a late show.
How is that place?
It's good. It's a good venue. It's a music venue usually. So they have a big stage and they have a good setup where the seats are facing the stage. I've done a couple comedy shows there and it's really nice.
Is it far?
A couple people have recorded. It's from DC. It's you can get there in 20 minutes or so.
Okay. Good.
Something like that. It's in Vienna. It's not too far. Maybe 25 minutes depending on what part of DC you're coming from, but
gotcha.
Yeah, it's a nice spot. Some comics a couple have recorded their albums there. Like it's a good room. Good.
It's good.
Good room.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good.
Good. Well, Andy, stick on to the line, but once we're done, this has been awesome, man. You've been a delight as always.
Thank you.
Very, very insightful. And guys, thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody. Time.